session number 17156, reel 1.
Mr. Chapman, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Brighton.
Which year was this?
The 1st of May, 1906.
Did you go to school in Brighton?
Yes, I went to the Brighton Secondary School, and then I wanted to go in the Navy, so I went to HMS Worcester, the Nautical Training College. It used to be at Greenhithe on the Thames. I went there in 1921, and I'd say 1923, 2 years. I became a first-class cadet captain. I got my first-class extra certificate in seamanship, the first class in navigation. I was a first-class cadet captain, and I got my rowing colours, and I was I competed as a rifle, shooting a rifle. I was an excellent oarsman, and I boxed, and funnily enough, the skipper of the Worcester, Captain Maxwell B. Sayer, was a great friend of the skipper was a very great friend of Mountbatten when he was courting, and I used to arrange tennis matches with him. He was an awfully nice bloke, and he used to give the first gig crew 10 shillings every time he went. Then later on, I met him.
Which years were you in Worcester?
21 to 23. And when I was at the end of the war, when I was on a resettlement course, I met Mountbatten again at a pub, and he was talking about he might marry the princess, and I thought nothing of it. Anyway, some years later, when the Worcester had its centenary, he came as our guest of honour, and we invited along the other two nautical schools, Conway, which is now defunct as well, and Pangbourne. He said, old P's and WC's, old Pangbourne's, old Worcester's, old Pangbourne's, old bugger, old P's and WC's. He was a great chap.
Have you any memories of the First World War?
Yes.
What are they?
Well, I had 9 uncles and cousins in the war. 2 of them at Gallipoli, and others in the trenches. And I have very vivid memories. I was 8 when the war broke out, and my mother came into her bedroom. We were going to spend a weekend, a fortnight on a farm. My mother came in and knelt down beside my bed. Oh, darling, we can't go for our holidays on the farm because the naughty Germans are fighting our soldiers. And I often wonder what difference it made to the war. Stop for a moment.
Anything else you can remember about the war?
Oh, rather, yes. I remember my uncles coming home, and the two at Gallipoli were very, very bad. They were very shocked. It was a terrible experience. And one was wounded, but fortunately they all survived, thank God. And I remember rationing, of course, and I was a wolf cub, and I used to run messages for... It was all... rationing book.
Did you suffer much from the lack of kind of foods that you wanted to eat?
No, as a matter of fact, my father was a hotelier, and we always managed to coped fairly well, and I always had a pint of milk a day, but my mother insisted upon that. Unfortunately, that must have been a very stable diet in those days, because I've still got most of my own teeth already. Today, I've got no false teeth, which is most unusual at 90.
What were you doing when the Second World War broke out?
Second World War, I was district manager of George G. Sandeman Sons & Co. Limited, the famous port shippers. I had a plum job. It was one of the finest jobs in the world, because everybody drank port in those days. And my district was the North Midlands, where I had some huge accounts. I had the top territory, and it was most exhilarating to work for them. Our sales director was a marvellous man. And anyway, the war broke out, and of course there was an embargo on shipments, and but I'd already joined up by, I felt I had this training in the Worcester and I could be of use, so I tried to join up on the Monday after the war broke out. I went up to the Old Fellows Hall in Queen's Road, Brighton, to join the Navy. I didn't care what rank I went in, and they weren't receiving anybody. So I didn't try to join the Army, and they said I have to sign on for 7 years. I said, damn that, the war will be over in a couple of years, a couple of months. So and then the following week, went up to London. I went to the Artists Rifles, the Westminster Goons, and tried to get a commission on the strength of my Worcester training in the Territorials. And anyway, reluctantly, I went to the Admiralty, and to my amazement, I was offered a job in the Marines. So I had all kinds of medicals, and eventually the Navy. And while I was in London, so I went to the Air Ministry, and by God, they accepted me in the SC Rescue Branch. It was called Marine Craft Section in those days. And I said to my wife, when I get back, first one sends me, gets me. And so I was caught on the 10th of June. I was commissioned in the Marine Section of the Royal Air Force. And I reported at Calshot, where that was the Marine Craft headquarters. They had no boats, of course, because they were. We had Scott Payne, double chined launches with three Napier Sea Lion 500 horsepower engines, and they were either made into rescue launches or mostly MTBs, so they were very hard to come by. So all during the Battle of Britain, I was going to sea in anything that would float, buoying fallen aircraft or rescuing poor doubles out of, mostly dead, out of the sea around the Isle of Wight. The Isle of Wight seemed to be a sort of turning point for the German aircraft. It was rather strange. When they were shot down, they were all very, very roughly made, and only one in about six or seven seemed to have a compass. They did everything they could to get as many aircraft in the air. All our engines were all beautifully honed down the surface of the outside, but the German engines were all rough and just as they came out of the mould, anything to get them in the air. And then I was posted up I was super new me to a chap named Scott in 142. High speed launch 142, and went up to Grimsby, where we covered the Norwegian evacuation when the Germans went in. We got a lot of Norwegians away. It was rather dicey up in the North Sea there. Anyway, then I was posted to Dover with Scott, and on the way down, as we were crossing the Wash, we set off. Acoustic mines, they're the mines that go off on the beat of the engine. in the shallow waters, and we were blown up. And I hit my head on the deck head and grazed my right elbow down the ship's side, doubled my knee under me, and my spine was damaged in a small of my back. My neck was damaged, and I'd eventually the nerve in my right elbow came out, my funny bone nerve came out, and that hand is semi-paralyzed now. And so we got to Dover. The boat we went to Brooks Yard in Harwich, I can't remember, and was more or less rebuilt. Then we got to Dover, and we were very, very busy. I used to take the boat out on alternate trips with Scott, and eventually I was a job came up in Gibraltar to open up a new base, and I volunteered and I was accepted.
Which Scott was this?
Leonard Scott. And anyway.
When were you injured on the acoustic mine?
That was the. That was in February 1941. I think it was about the 21st of February 1941. And anyway, we were so busy, I didn't lay up as I should have done. And so I had 10 days application leave. I went out to Buxton, and funnily enough, a few weeks before in April, I'd made a propaganda film for Pathé Gazette. And my daughter said, "Daddy, put your uniform on. We're getting the cinema half price tonight. There's a film I'd like to see." And blow me, during the programme, they showed this blessed propaganda film I made, and everybody got up and cheered me. And I felt such a twit.
A propaganda film on behalf of the RC Rescue Service.
Yes, that's right. The new service. It was first appeared. Anyway, unfortunately, when I got back to Dover to pick up my gear, I had a jeep coming to pick me up to take me to Calshot at 5 o'clock the next morning.
You said a chap.
Oh, that's right. And one of the chaps collapsed, and he was duty boat, so they told me to take his launch over 24 hours. I said, relief. So we had a call out, and the bearing 098 DGN, that's Dungeness, 18 miles, which took me very nearly to the up into Boulogne. So I put the perspex on the chart and started a square search, and we got nearly up in the high street in Boulogne. We could see Germans walking up and down and people watching us, and there were 7109s going around over our heads. But we'd just had this brand new device, a bright yellow deck, and a 6 foot roundel, RAF roundel on the foredeck, and so to be distinguished, because the Germans had got life rafts all along the French coast, and we respected them, and we expect them to respect us, because in any case we were looking for one of their chaps, so it turned out. So anyway, we got so near the shore that I gave my coxswain the instructions to take a bearing on Dungeness Lighthouse, because the sea and the tide were setting that way. We might pick up something to recognise. Anyway, the 7109s had landed and refuelled and came back, and they shot us to hell. We got into a big port turn, and it was a sitting target. We were burning from stem to stern. Of course, none of the blessed fire extinguishers worked. So I was doing my best to make a course, and the coxswain said, "Oh my God, I've been hit in the shoulder, Gov." So I said, "Well, I'll take the wheel. You go and lie down in your bunk." So he did so, but then a few minutes later we were burning so badly, I gave orders to abandon ship. and everybody but the second Warasov, who couldn't swim, could swim. But the first Warasov had been shot through the lung. He was unconscious, so I got them all in the dinghy, like a cat with her kittens, dropping them into the dinghy. And I tried to get the engineers out. The flame shot out of the wheel, the hatch, and scorched all my tunic all down the front and burned off my moustache and eyebrows. And anyway, so I put that down very quickly and got the chaps in. As it won't be long now, it's only 18 miles, and the dinghy was wooden dinghy riddled with, like a calendar. Anyway, the Germans came round to make a lee to pick us up in their rescue launch, and they had a China boat too, which was very clumsy, and one of the Chinas caught the edge of the dinghy, and we were all capsized in the water. So there I was with one unconscious Warasov snorting blood all over me as I held him by the backside of his trousers to keep him up. And the other one who couldn't swim was hung under the hood of my duffel coat. Anyway, they came round again and they lowered over a big line with a big ice splice in, and I managed to get this round the chaps and they were taken out. Then it was my turn and they dropped this blessed thing down, and I got my leg in it, and unfortunately I was so weak by this time, so I still had my duffel coat on, and I just capsized out of this loop and started to sink, and I could see the outline of the boat above me. I thought, my God, Chapman, you're drowning. So I then realized I got my tin hat on, so I shook that off and I came back again. They eventually got me out, and so I said, "Oh, my chaps, all down in sick bay being treated." I said, "Well, how about my coxswain? So that man you mean? He's in the shows. He's up there, up forward." So I went up forward, and there was Smith with his hand on the rail, with his back facing forward, and there was a medical orderly with a probe, this huge gash in his right shoulder, and he put this probe in there and flicked, and it was a whole shell, cannon gun shell, and it spun. As it hit the water, it exploded. It exploded when we were in the cabin. We'd have both been beheaded, so I thought that was a bit of luck. Anyway, he gave me a bottle of Martell brandy. I drank about a third of it. I recovered myself a bit, and then we were taken to Boulogne, and a little squirt came down, a sort of a little fellow with a little beard and moustache, about 5'2". He said, the victor and the vanquished. And he was a major, in the Luftwaffe, that led this attack on me. He said, "The victor and the vanquished?" I said, "We weren't armed." I said, "What the hell is, what's the marvellous about that?" So he said, you come to celebrate in our casino, that's their mess." I said, "Not bloody likely." So anyway, there was a Prussian standing there, liaison officer between the Luftwaffe and their Marine Corps section. And he was very cocky, he had a monocle, and he'd lost his arm, and his left sleeve was bare, and he started telling me how rude I was and all that kind of thing. Anyway, I was taken back to the headquarters at the Hotel Bristol in Boulogne, where their headquarters, and there was a big window overlooking the sea. And the skipper of this rescue launch, he'd been with P&O. He spoke perfect English. He was an awfully nice bloke. And he was very disturbed about us being shut up because he was running about his rafts. Anyway, the room was full of little pipsqueaks in Nazi uniform. They were newspaper reporters all doing the hard little stuff. And this skipper sat down at a desk, a double desk, facing this Prussian with a monocle. So he said, he was talking to him, and I was looking intently, and they brought us in a mug of coffee made from acorns. It was dreadful. A bit of black bread. And we were sitting this uninjured wireless up when I couldn't swim. And we didn't know what was going on. They were talking to each other. And the German suddenly looked at me and he said, "You understand German, no?" Well, that some of my wife and I, but for the war, needed to go for a trip on the Rhine. So a friend of my father's, jeweler, who trained in Switzerland, said, "Oh, you don't want to worry, Edward. When you go to Germany, just say, gave it to me on double bit, and you'll get a double bit." What German do you know? This Prussian said. I said, "Gave it to me on double bit." So that brought chaos, and he put his cap on and slammed out of the room, and all these little twits, you know, fancy insulting a major like that, and they were giggling and hysterically. So this other bloke sent them off, and eventually we had a lovely cream tea and marvellous, and we listened to the news, and he kept ringing up. I didn't speak any German then, and these different mates, every time he got to a certain point, he slapped his leg and gave him a double bet, so he was telling my story. He must have been loath, this man.
What was the date when you were attacked? Do you know? Or the month?
Yes, it was June.
1941?
Yes, it was the 10th of June. No, sorry, it was May the 8th. May the 8th, 1941.
Was it unusual for the Germans to attack air sea rescue launches?
I've been sure that before, but that was before the we had this special deck. Prior to that, I've been shot up several times. My wife was staying down there for our wedding anniversary in March, and. She said, "I saw one of your friends shoot over the hotel. This bloke came in as I was docking in Ramsgate Harbour, and we were staying in Ramsgate because there were no hotels in Dover, and so she saw me docking in Ramsgate Harbour, the transom, the flat end of it, but was absolutely like a colander, and with holes, it had been very badly shot up. Oh, and then I was dive bombed once or twice.
Do you think those other occasions were because they didn't recognise you?
Well, they just thought, well, we should have done. We had different markings from the Navy. We had a huge number written on the bow, each side. And around an RAF round on the side of it. I don't know what they thought anyway.
So why do you think they deliberately attacked you on this occasion?
Oh, when you think it was enemy. And they were winning, don't forget. They conquered France.
Did the RAF tend to attack their air sea rescue?
Not to my knowledge.
And what was the number of your high-speed launch that was shot up?
It was 142.
What rank did you have at the time?
I just been made squadron leader to open this new base, and as I said, my 10-day vacation leave, and I was hoping to go to Kelshaw to go to Scott Payne, see if I wanted any mods done to the launch before it was shipped out to Gibraltar.
Before we go on to your POW experience, do you have any stories about pilots that you rescued?
I can't think of any of their names now, but the terrible thing was seeing when they'd been in the cold water when we were off Norway, when we were up at Grimsby. It was terrible, the agony they were in. And the scramble nets that we lowered over the side, whether it was had to send chap down each side to help them get out of the water in a terrible state. But
were they in agony from the cold?
Cold mostly, yeah. Terrible.
So once you got a rescued man in board, what did you first do with him?
Oh, put warm towels around him, bare his extremities, because he's made the feet that they got frostbitten, and used to cut off their flying boots and put warm, wet towels around them. We had a very good three or four chaps were very specially trained for that in the crew.
Did you have any heating arrangements on board?
Yes, we had only not normal heating arrangements, yes.
Are there any rescues that particularly stick out in your mind?
Not really, no. They're all, you know, we just took them for granted.
Was it both German and Allied that you were...
Yeah, we picked up a couple of Germans once, but... twice I picked up two Germans and then one German. That was at Dover. But one of the awful things down at Dover was Norwegian. The Norwegians were marvellous blokes, and there were some Norwegian MTBs at Dover, and the skipper of one said, I'm going on a night mission tonight, and I shan't need this. This is the whip that they used to fly at the masthead when you're going into action. This is a tradition in the British Navy. The old whip the enemy from the seas. He said, I shan't need this. He'd like to go after it for me while I go. The poor devil was didn't come back. I'll keep that as very treasured.
It's like a strip of Norwegian fag.
Yes, that's right. It's, they call it a whip.
A long strip.
Yeah. But that's a battle whip when you went into action. I know the exhibition would like that, would they?
The museum?
Museum, I mean.
They probably would, actually. Yeah. I think, yes. Thank you. So, if we can come back to your treatment by the Germans once you were captured, can you take it on?
Well, yes, actually, then I was put in a train with a couple of officers, and we went into Belgium. And on the train, they were quite reasonable. There was another chap, I can't give his name now, but he managed to jump the train. And he got home. I can't give his name, but anyway, then we went up on the train, first class, up to... To Hamburg, yes, to the transit camp. And Durchgangslager.
To Dulagluft?
Dulagluft, that's right, yes.
And this is at Oberursel near Frankfurt.
That's right, yes. You can have that if you like. And that's where we were taken.